So this is an opportunity to ask a question of any of the panelists. You may also have a story to tell about maybe a bargaining struggle that you're going through as well.
I wanted to ask a question of Sister Sylvie Goyer. I come from Local 3912 in Halifax, which represents three university sectors at Dalhousie, Mount St. Vincent, and also St. Mary's University. We represent part-time faculty and teaching assistants there. We've had great success in being able to get our wages lifted from the paltry wages that we started at and when we, our first collective agreement came into place in 1998, and that was a good bump up. We've more than doubled our salary since then, but we've had a really tough time getting benefits and getting, in particular, they won't even talk to us even about an RRSP plan or pensions. And with the economic downturn, we are feeling as we're preparing for our new round of bargaining that perhaps this is the time to go after those benefits and pension plans, maternity leaves and so forth. Could you give us any advice on how you did it and how you were so successful with that?
Well, I hope to be able to reply to your question, but I also have my colleagues here that will probably be able to assist you in exactly how you should proceed during the bargaining rounds. Well, oh my, how did we manage to succeed like that? Well, first of all, we needed to have a thorough knowledge of the issue, and we had to convince the members about that. We also needed people that would, time after time, repeat the message, convince members that we had to be united, even though if it took many years. I had to summarize in 10 minutes almost 15 years of battles. But the key word for us was we did it step by step. We obtained some gain, then we moved on to something else. As for the benefits, even for those that were part-timers, well, then maybe my colleagues here have more information about how to proceed. Well, I could, but could you please repeat the question regarding the temporary employees to be more specific so that I can give you an answer?
Yes, they're part-time teaching faculty. They teach on a contract basis, course to course, and our teaching assistants are usually only at Dalhousie for a year, sometime 2 years. It's even difficult to get them to realize they're in a union. So organizing strong defenses, strong strike strategy and so forth sometimes become a problem, but as TAs, they do have benefits, but our part-time teaching staff do not. We have very few even leaves to be able to take, and no pensions, no benefits to speak of. A small amount of professional development monies. C'est ça.
Well, I could talk about our own experience. It might not reply to your question, but I could explain how we ensure that our members all worked on this issue. We have, well, about 50% of our members are temporary workers. So out of 8,000 employees, close to 4,000 of them are temporary employees. So right there, we had quite an impact. And the fact that we work for the city of Montreal, we can compare ourselves to other government employees because there's a group like Employment Quebec, where the Quebec government, where they find that it's hard for them to call the members to go out on strike because they work in all kinds of regions of the province. But since we work on the island of Montreal, we are all close by, and it's easy for us to gather them whenever we need to hold a meeting, for instance, for March 8th. On March 8th, this meeting is organized by women. Many Montreal women, our members, work at organizing that. We invite all kinds of guests, comedians, painters, all women artists that have a certain talent. We call them in to assist us in setting up that March 8th. The purpose is to use that day to talk about what we intend to do in terms of the next collective bargaining process, amongst other things. So this is one of the strategies. So when we sit down at the bargaining table, we already have an outline of what our members would like to obtain. We also have a newsletter that allows us to send out the message to the other members. Of course, this is something that is done over time. You cannot do this overnight. So we have been in this position for 4 years, and from the start of our mandate, we've always worked on those objectives, and we've focused on those objectives. So this is how I could summarize our situation in the city of Montreal. So when we need to call upon the members for whatever event, of course, we need to do a lot of work. We have to go in the various neighborhoods to meet with them, but they are made aware of the situation. I'm not saying it's easy, but it does work.
Thank you. Carol Kenzie, QP Local 6015 Hospital Employees Union. And I actually wasn't planning to speak, but I heard Shelley's story, and I thought it was so inspiring. And I want to share with you a story from the Hospital Employees Union. In 2006, in our contract, and we represent 43,000 hospital workers in British Columbia, we managed to negotiate a $5 million education fund. And it has changed the lives of so many of our members. It's been divided into either long-term or short-term courses. So if you're a clerical worker, maybe you just want to upgrade, take an Excel course for a week, you get paid for it. If you're a laundry worker and you want to become an LPN, you can apply, and they not only pay all the costs of your courses, but they also pay, $1,000? $100 a day. I just have to say that $100 a day so that you don't have to do without your wages. I mean, you can go to school, you can upgrade. There's no better way for women to improve their lot in life than having access to education. And you know what? That's what my union has given the women in HEU. And with any luck, in 2010, we'll get maybe $10 million. Right, Judy? Thank you.
Thank you, sister. Mike, too.
Hello, my name is Jackie Dwyer, and I'm with QP Local 2204, Child Care Workers of Eastern Ontario. I want to first thank all of the presenters. It was very empowering to hear your personal stories, and I want to thank you all. The issue that's most near and dear to my heart is the issue of pensions. And so I have a quick question for Maria, but also I have a I'd like to say a few words about some pension options that are available out there for QP members. My question for Maria is, Maria, you talked about achieving pension benefits for temporary full-time workers. Does that mean that your part-time workers do not have access to pension benefits? Or is that something that I missed in your presentation?
I'm sorry, did you say full-time members? Or
no, I said, You said that you achieved pension benefits for temporary full-time workers. Are part-time workers able to access pension benefits as well?
Yes, they are under the plan rules. They earn in within a two-year period. They have to earn a third of the YMPE, and then they become eligible for enrollment. But the temporary full-time workers were not eligible for that because of the the fact that they were terminated.
Okay.
Their employment was terminated after each season. And so the time that they worked was never counted.
Okay, so thank you for that clarification. I'd like to just maybe inform those of you in the room, if you're not aware of the multi-sector pension plan, which is a pension plan that was developed by QP and the SEIU, the Service Employees International Union. It was developed in 2002, and it was developed specifically for union members who did not have access to a pension plan. And many of those members are women. Many of us work in the social service sector where we don't have access to employer-sponsored pension plans. So this is an alternative. If you do not have access to a pension plan in your workplace, that the MSPP is an alternative for QP members, and there are some wonderful assets to having a pension plan. Any of you who don't have a pension plan, I'm a childcare worker. I've been a childcare worker for 35 years, and most of those years I did not have a pension plan. So when the MSPP came into being in 2002, that was the first opportunity that I, as a childcare worker, had to become a pension plan participant. And that was something that we had been waiting for close to 20 years, because our local went looking for a pension plan in 1986, and there just wasn't anything out there for us. So, I mean, I'm very thankful to QP and SEIU for taking the bull by the horns and making sure that those benefits are available to all of us. But I also want you to take this information back to your locals. If you and your regions, if you don't have access to a pension plan, please find out more about the MSPP. We have a website, www.mspp, which stands for Multi-Sector Pension Plan. We're a very fast-growing plan. Like I said, we started in 2002, and I believe we have 6,000 members right now, and it's growing month by month by month. So, and if anybody has any questions about that, please seek me out at some point during the convention. I'd be very happy to talk about that. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Sister. Four. Mike four. Mike four.
Thank you. My name is Suli Trujillo, local 2153, childcare worker from Winnipeg Child and Family Service. We are currently negotiating our collective agreement. We don't have pension. We are offering by the employer to give us pension only to the permanent workers. In their own act, pension act for the province, they prohibit to do so. If either we have pension, all of us, or none of us. So when they offered us, they said only to the permanent workers. We come back and tell them, you know, that's again your own rule. Are you willing to break your own rule? Because we don't want to be liable later on. So they have taken back their offer. They're taking now 2 months to answer us. We don't know what's going to be the offer back from them. But I feel that we wait so long for the pension. And pension is a deferral wages. If you don't have good pension, you probably will end up poor, poorer than the poor. And you know already, as a worker, as a woman, You have very low wages. Imagine you don't have pension. So my question is to people who are expert in pension, how we can go to pursue our goal to have a pension this year. Also, we don't have development, educational development plan. My employer is this unique place where you are hired to be a childcare support worker and you dine to be support worker. You don't go anywhere, no promotion, no nothing. And when we want to have a leave of absence for education, they deny us every time. Unless it's sponsored by the union, so we can come to the seminars or to this, and it's paid by a local. We don't have access. So we could like to have this $5 million, $10 million, so we can develop and be somewhere else or grow into the into the workplace that we are. So I'm looking for advice and looking for ways to get what I need. And I'm grateful for any tip that I can get it. Thank you.
So, sister, first of all, I would suggest you talk to the sister who just spoke about the multi-sector pension plan. So you two should seek each other out. And I don't know if any of the panelists want to speak on that. This is, your question is quite broad, and it will be things that we'll be strategizing in the workshops in the afternoon. But if any panelist wants to speak to it.
Well, it's, as a pension activist for many years, it's wonderful to see pensions in the forefront. Mm-hmm. To the sister, your pension is your deferred wages. And I think the most important thing that you need to do is to galvanize your membership around the fact that pension is part of your wage compensation, and that should be paid. It's being put away for your future, and make that the issue. I think if members took their pensions, their deferred wages, as seriously as they take their wages that they're paid at the time of work, there would be no question every member would have a pension plan right now within QP. So the best advice I can give is go back and pensions, deferred wages, and keep hammering it to the members and the importance of that issue.
Thank you. So I'm just rotating through the mics, so I'm going to mic three now.
Hi there. It's Luella Vincent, Local 6238, Hospital Employees Union, Social Service Sector. So I'm not going to tell you how poorly I'm paid and that I don't have pensions and all that stuff. Instead, I'm going to tell you something positive because Margaret inspired me. The last round of bargaining, we were split into, taken from our own groups of bargaining and put 13 unions together at the table. And we spent most of that time jostling for position, trying to get the best thing for each of our own unions. This time around, the government isn't going to catch us off guard because the members themselves have got together and we've been doing some work. March is Social Services Month. We are engaged with all the municipalities in getting decorations to have it declared Social Services Month. March 16th, we have a walk in Victoria for 5K. You're all welcome to come out. We could use the bodies. Yeah. But that isn't really, that was a special news announcement just for me, and so thank you. What I want to say is we are very powerful, our own selves, each and every one of us. And a couple of us had a dream of all the unions working together. So us small members, Michael Lanier from QP, I couldn't find him anywhere in here, he's somewhere in here, and BCGEU, the steelworkers, we all got together and we've been working together since the last contract that was so crappy. And we've been working behind the lines to join the members. So when we go on strike, because we are going to go on strike, because we're not taking another crappy collective agreement. We're going to be united. And that's because the members got together and decided that we as social service workers deserve better and that we as social service workers could bring more to the table. And that was just the little members. So don't think you're not powerful, because we are. That's it.
Thank you. Mic number one.
I'm Shanaz Motani from the University of British Columbia, and I was very inspired by the story of my sister Sylvie Goyer from the University of Montreal. Et je voudrais m'adresser à vous, ma consoeur.
Alors, Sister Goyer, I would like to, first of all, thank you for the victories that you had, the gains that you made in your fight for wage equity, and I would also like you to talk to us about what your next steps would be and what the elements of these steps would be in order to get wage equity. I think you're talking about 2006, you're going to catch up from 2006 to now, you got to sort that up. Okay, that's the period from 1996 to now. Now, starting in 2000, we're following what the law provides in Quebec for wage equity. Now, at the moment, we're following this process, and what we have to do is this. We have to evaluate all of these male and female jobs and compare compensations, and the goal, of course, to have equal pay for work of equal value. Now, the law provides various steps in this process. We have to go see our members, for example. We got to go see the various wage earners. We're a part of a committee. It's a joint committee with the employer. And at certain steps, we have to talk to the wage earners and tell them what's been going on. Now, half of the work is about done. We're about to finish the rest of the work. Now, one thing is sure. We are certainly lucky in Quebec to have this special legislation. Beforehand, we had a fight before every commission, every tribunal, at every case. And the rest of Canada, as far as I know, this right to go before tribunals is threatened elsewhere in Canada, apparently. They want to set up a kind of a bargaining round between the unions and the bosses for wage equity, and which will probably never work. That's not the way to do it. We're lucky in Quebec. We're lucky. We saw that going to these tribunals was long, expensive for effort and energy. Now, our legislation might not be perfect in Quebec, but we have a good legislation, and I think it's going to give us something. I think we're far down the track. Now, can we keep this? I don't know. In these women's files, that's the problem that we have. That's our fear. We're making gains, but all of a sudden, buff, the door closes, and you got to keep your foot in the door so you don't lose anything that you've already gained. And this is true as far as working conditions are concerned, as far as pension plans are concerned, and every other subject we've mentioned. We have to be united. Solidarity must guide us. It's thanks to solidarity. Say, we're not capricious. We're half of the society, women. And we're not just here for frivolous reasons. We have to denounce some provincial governments which don't want to put men and women on the same level.
Thank you. My name is Alex Youngberg. I'm from QP Local 391, Vancouver Public Library Workers. Thank you so much to QP National and this wonderful group of women that is bringing so many issues to us that are so relevant today. I could ask questions from everyone, but I have two questions. I'd also like to put in another plug for Grand Forks. That's a little local of five people, library workers in British Columbia, and as a local of 800 that went on strike for pay equity last year for 3 months, can you imagine what the struggle is for a local of five workers in the middle of British Columbia trying to hang on to their benefits? We can say it in these rooms, but there's some gender-bashing thugs on that library board. Now, we won't get sued in these rooms, will we, for saying that, but that's the truth. They're trying to get rid of their library board. Their municipal council is supporting them. But one thing that's interesting in negotiations with these small library locals is that each board compares the contract of the other library locals. And if these guys get their benefits rolled back, the next bargaining that comes up for the next small library will have the same thing happen. So it's very important that we get out there and we support these locals and continue that fight. Five people are vulnerable, but we've got 600,000 members. That makes them powerful. Now, actually, I did mean to address the workplace violence and the diversity, but I would like to say on our pay equity struggle that we got 14 we had 14 positions that received one pay grade in our round of bargaining. We didn't get the JE plan, but what we did fight for shortly afterwards was we put money and members in fighting that municipal election, and you could say we've got nine members on councillors on that municipal board out of 10 that are labour friendly now. Yes. And not only that, if in municipal library boards in British Columbia, the library board is appointed by the municipal government. So now we have, it's just the balance has slightly changed. We now have a slightly labor-friendly board. So 2 days after the election, our city librarian said, well, let's start talking about a job evaluation plan before the next round of bargaining. And I'm sure he didn't just have this brain flash. So get out there, women, and fight those elections and fight them as a collective. And for God's sakes, don't vote for Stephen Harper or Gordon Campbell in the next election because they don't like us. And so, anyway, that's the good news. And we have the provincial election coming up, so remember where your vote's going to go. Because as Monique pointed out, that's where the real strength takes place, is changing the legislative language around pay equity. You can do some of it at the bargaining table, but let's do it provincially in British Columbia. Thank you so much, Ontario and Quebec, for setting it such a fine example. Now, I was also interested, Shelley Watrous, in the representative workforce strategy. We're having union management meetings around diversity groups, and what they want us to do is accept diversity workers without the normal standards that we have for education, which is fine by us. But since both sides actually have the ability to give, we actually can help fund people's education for a library technician or a librarian, you know, $500 a year grants from both sides. We want them to encourage these workers that are hired, the Aboriginal workers, diversity workers, instead of these small temporary contracts, to turn them, encourage them to stay in the workplace, whether it's bringing elders on to the committee or other representatives from the community. And so I'm quite interested in hearing about your representative workforce strategy and if it speaks to that. And also, Melanie, your workplace violence. We have two grievances at the moment. We've combined on names on the website and names on our name tags. You were speaking to what it's like to be frontline workers. Well, library workers across the province, you know, there are obviously there is violence in the workplace that people don't recognize for library workers. They think we have a very tame job, but when you look at our downtown library, which has 6,000 to 8,000 people come through a day, and it becomes a home for the homeless during the day, there's all kinds of we have stalkers, we run the gamut. And now our employer, which you spoke to it very clearly today, that the employer bends over backwards, providing privacy for patrons and protecting the safety of patrons from the staff, for God's sakes. and you know, we know that library workers love the patrons, but they completely ignore our safety concerns, and now they have. Some members of our staff have their library, or their full names plus their work sites and their work site locations. And we have various documented cases that we did take to the library board, tried to change this around. They're actually changing policies to allow this, and now full names on the name tags.
Sister,
well,
could you?
Sorry.
Because there's a number of other speakers at the mic.
But so. Anyway, it all speaks to the same thing, that we're not looking at, that it works as a place safety, and thank you very much for speaking out on that. And I'll try and borrow some of your language. Thank you.
Does she want to speak? Okay. Now, the speakers at Mic 2 have been there longer than the speakers at 3 and 1, but also speaker at 4 has been there. So I'm going to go to 4 and then back to 2, just because I know it's hard standing for a long time. So speaker number 4.
Oh,
that's you.
I am. Here I am, waking up. Sanjit Rehal with Local 4400 Education Sector. I just want to share and remind everyone that as we're communicating, maintaining the dialogue, the acronyms are not helpful. Mm-hmm. So can you please be cognizant of that? Mm-hmm. Thanks.
Okay. Thank you for noting that. Mic 2.
Hello, I'm Sherry Cameron. I'm from Local 4092 in Toronto, the Air Canada flight attendants. And I'd just like to tell you, first of all, I'd like to thank you for the conference and the motivational and inspirational stories that I've heard today, because we really need it at the airline division. We've been in a 16-year battle with our employers for pay equity. 13 years into our battle, Air Canada declared bankruptcy protection, and this is a nifty twist of acts and legislation in the country. It took away our bargaining rights. We didn't have the right to strike. We lost about 17% in wages and working conditions. We also had a Bay Street banker declare that our pay equity complaint was worth nothing. So when all the other stakeholders that Air Canada owed money to were going to get 7 cents on the dollar, when we win our pay equity complaint, we're going to get zero for the first 13 years of our complaint. So that's been established. As part of the bankruptcy protection, Air Canada ended up getting more time to pay money that they owed into our pension plan because they didn't have the money. They now owe, I think, twice as much as they did at that time, and they're now saying, if we have to pay it, we're going to go bankrupt. So these are the types of things that we're up against. Creative legislation, creative acts, but I know I'm going to learn a lot here. I've got to tell you that without a bunch of small people coming together to form this huge union of QP, we would have never been able to go forward with our pay equity complaint, and that's what a union's all about, and I'm proud to be part of one.
Sister at mic 2 again.
I didn't get the chair, so you'd let me speak first. I was just tired standing. Yvonne Sullivan, Local 2329. I'm a library worker. I always find it more inspirational when I come to these things. We talk theory and statistics, but to hear people actually tell their stories always inspires me. And to the sister who's the flight attendant, I just like to point out that the crash on the Hudson should prove the work that the flight attendants do and break any stereotypes. There was just a couple of quick points I wanted to touch on. One of them is violence. I'm a library worker as well, and we've mentioned violence from the public. I mean, we have porno stations in our library. We have sex criminals in our library. But when I get among a bunch of women, the first thing I'd like to talk about is women's form of violence. We're socialized differently. We don't tend to hit like men do. But often in our locals, we tend to shun. We tend to backbite. And I just want to say that this is a form of harassment as well. We need to get it down to our members. Right now, I'm in the executive. I've been on the executive of my local for 20-something years. And it's a female-dominated workplace, 98%. Right now, the executive is being shunned because we're trying to do our duty under the collective agreement. And it's very difficult. You need the support of your members. And I think a lot of it is women don't realize that if you don't speak to somebody in the morning, that that's a form of harassment. I would recommend respectful workplace programs. That's helped a bit with us. The other point I wanted to make was there's a course being offered by QP Education that I'd like to put kudos in for. It's Women Breaking Barriers. I don't know how many women here have attended. I have. And I think that's the sort of information you'll get out of that course, that you go in with one mindset, and after spending a week with a bunch of amazing women, you'll come out with a different mindset and then bring it back to your local. Thanks.
Thank you. So, Cheryl, Sister Cheryl was at the mic, and then we'll go to 1 and 3 after that, and the last sister, and I think that'll be it for the points from the mics.
Thank you. Cheryl Burns, QP Local 1936, Vancouver, British Columbia. First of all, I want to thank all of you for such incredibly inspiring stories and also the incredibly useful strategies that you shared with all of us. I know I've been taking notes, and I'll certainly go back with some of those strategies. A couple of things. I first want to talk a little bit about the situation of social services in British Columbia. Margaret, I was really, really inspired by what you said and the gains that you achieved there. Because for those of you who don't know, and I'm sure most of you know, women in BC have been in a war since Gordon Campbell got into power. And one of the first things that he did was he legislated social services into coordinated bargaining. And while in many situations coordinated bargaining can be a really useful and powerful strategy, in this situation, it was a challenging strategy because there were 13 unions at the table. And even within the labor movement, at times we can have slightly different goals and strategies. And so QP, unfortunately, was not one of the most powerful unions at that table, nor was HEU, although we formed incredibly strong alliances between many of the unions. As a result of Campbell's waging war on women, because women primarily compose social services, as we all know, and most of the women there, too, are immigrant women as well, and women of color, and so we need to recognize that Campbell is in a war not just on women, but on marginalized women as well. Anyways, social services had just taken one hit after the other, and so now I hear stories from my members of mothers who are having to go to the food bank in order to supplement their income, even though they're working as hard as they are. Certainly I hear stories of women who are becoming increasingly injured on the job because they don't have the protection and because we have major recruitment and retention issues. And that means that women are working long, long hours that they shouldn't be working. Employers are coming up with some really creative strategies to avoid paying overtime, that kind of thing. So just thank you for that. It's good to know that it's possible to get beyond 2%, 3% wage increases and more. So thank you. I also had a quick, probably very simple question for Sylvie. And it's around a definition of pay equity that we all understand in this room, because I know it's a term that's often thrown out there. And you spoke of the issue of looking at men's jobs in your local and women's jobs and the difference in pay between them. So I just wanted to make sure that we're all on the same page and we all have the same definition of pay equity for those of us who might not be as exposed to the concept. So if you could provide us with that, that'd be fabulous. Thanks.
The principle of pay equity is equal pay for work of equal value. Now, we're comparing, in fact, men's work and women's work in many cases. For example, as far as qualifications are concerned, we can also compare the effort that's put out. Some men's work, there's more physical effort involved, but the mental effort exists too. Don't forget the intellectual effort. And often it's the women who have to do the intellectual effort. The same thing is true about autonomy. We can continue in this vein Now, they have to be black from physical work to say that you're in contact with dirt? Or do cashiers, you know, money is filthy. Money's filthy, and cashiers have to touch this filthy money. So we talk about dirt. So this is one of the values at work for women. We're not saying that we're going to say that men's work is without value. No. There are a lot of men who also work in women's work, as we sometimes have women working in men's work, you know. We talk about service work, office work, men's work, women's work, and, you know, so we need physical work for some work, and men often do that work. So we're trying to compare the two. We're trying to compare two things. Now, you have to have some kind of an assessment plan. In QP Quebec, we've got a lot of expertise, and they helped us a lot. They really, really guided us in the course of our years. Now, if feminine work, women's work, arrives to the same, with same points in a point system, then we compare the salaries. Sometimes it's exactly the same point. Sometimes there's 20 points of difference, you know. There are methods of evaluating and assessing. I don't want to go into the details with this, but QP Quebec has stuff that helps. But you can compare. And you can look at the salary curve for men, and you can see where the women are. Now, this is not something we just invented. This is a calculation that we do. There are methods. There do exist methods. And it's been shown that in society, women earn about 70% of what men earn. There are improvements, yes, but there's a lot of work to be done. There are some places where pay equity was realized, was accomplished, and women did get adjustments, and the adjustments were very big. For example, a school crossing guards, people who work as lifeguards. There are a lot of jobs like that that are typically women's work, but we got a wonderful pay increases because of this comparison and this scale. So that's the principle of pay equity. It's equivalent work, equal pay for work of equal value.
Phone number one.
Bonjour, je m'appelle Brigitte Couturier. Je suis ma présidente du...
Brigitte Couturier, president of 4427. We're in the British Columbia support workers in the education sector. And I'm talking here about learning. And Sylvie, I must tell you that we also, at the moment, are going through a reassessment of our jobs, reevaluation. We got terrific support from QP National. We have tools that really are helping us. The method that Sylvie mentioned is relatively easy to assimilate and easy to put into practice. And I would encourage everybody to work with your rep to get more information about this. These tools do exist. Now, I would like to talk to Shelley. Shelley, you really inspired me. You really inspired me. And I think it's true for other sisters and brothers in the room. A few days ago, maybe 10 days ago, I was at an open forum, kind of a town forum on reading. QP was there, the employers were there, union members were there, and community groups were there. And over the 3 days of this meeting, we tried to point out the importance of the fact that training in the workplace is important and has an impact on people. And it came out during these 3 days of meetings. And I know that if you had been there, Shelley, you certainly would have inspired us even further than we were inspired. I would also like to say that QP really believes in education in the workplace, training in the workplace, and workshops are always set up in order to organize training programs in the workplace, educational programs for all members. And I would like to invite all of those who are inspired by what Shelley had to say to us to go to these union reps and to see how we can set up and organize such workshops in our workplace. We're lucky in our national committees to have a wonderful champion to defend reading and working in learning in the workplace, and it's our Gloria, who's the education rep in Nova Scotia. All of those reps, all of everyone working is working very hard to help people
to develop their skills and their competencies and to develop and discover their own potential. Thank you very much.
My name is Polly Siwe from 4308 in Toronto. I stand here to thank Shelley for giving me the privilege to listen to your story and your journey of success, not only as a woman, but a survivor. As a union steward, I go back to Toronto with a huge task to ensure that women who belong to this union will be not dismissed by the employer based on absence at work due to abuse at home. I'll work with the union and employer to ensure that such strong women like yourself, Shelley, are supported but not fired, so they will also realize their dreams through our union. Because I think this is very important, and it is equity that we are talking about in this convention. Thank you very much, Shelley.
And the last point on number two, and don't leave because there's an announcement and there's another presentation. So speaker at number two.
Thank you. My name is Tammy Lundgren, local 2348. I'm from Winnipeg. I like to speak on about the violence at the workplace. I'm an addictions counselor. And I have a personal story about the violence in the workplace. Right now, I'm presently off work due to a client that had attacked me. I have two jobs. I work at the detox unit as well. The clients go there for 10 days before they come to our program. I had one client that I had in the detox, and then I was bringing him over to the program for 3 months. In the program, he was somebody that I had helped to get onto the drug court program. He came out of the jail because he committed a crime under the influence of drugs, so he was eligible for the drug treatment program. I felt I knew him pretty well, and when I was bringing him up the stairs, there I fought also for cameras to be in there, because this was not only we have quite a bit of violence that happens in this place, and I'm also on the health and safety committee at work. And the first time I was attacked with a knife to my throat, and this was about a year and a half previous, and got out of that one, thank goodness, but asked for cameras to be in the stairwells, and I was denied, and the meetings were shut down by my employer. So with no cameras or anything in the stairwell, where nobody can see anything, I had to go down two flights of stairs and open the door for this guy and bring him up the stairs. He was happy to get into the program and grabbed me from behind and went to give me a hug. And I pulled his hands away from me, and we have a dress code there. And I, of course, have big heels on and a long dress sweater and like a nice tights or whatever under the sweater. And I go up the stairs, and he's behind me, and he attacked me. And he raped me on the stairs. This is a year ago. And I'm still off work. But they still have no cameras in there. And they let the guy come back again and live there. This is the Salvation Army. And he attacked another staff again.
And she was pregnant. And after that, they let him come again. And he's still walking the street, by the way. But it's still going through court. And I want to just thank everybody, because if it's not for the union, I wouldn't be alive today, because they saved my life. They keep me busy, and they saved me. And they give me two positions on the union. They make me recording secretary, and they make me the social chair. So they keep me very busy. And they give me lots of things to go to, and I'm very happy that they do that for me. So thank you so much, and I love all your stories.
Thank you, sister, for telling that very difficult story. Violence is not part of the job. I feel a bit speechless now. I would like to thank the panelists. Wait, before we do that, there's a quick announcement. I was passed this note because Deb Taylor is going to do a presentation for the panelists. The money that was raised on the floor for the strikers was $2,744.77. So again, thanks again for wonderful panelists. Thank you for all of your stories and contributions as participants. Deb Taylor.